Chris Dortch, who's on the line with us. Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook. He's the editor. It's fantastic. It's everything you could possibly want to know about college basketball. And more importantly, everybody's going to be filling out those brackets before they tip tomorrow. Chris, how we doing?
Doing well, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. As you can imagine, in this market, a lot of talk on Monday, a lot of talk leading up to the SEC basketball tournament on what Vanderbilt had to do. I said I thought they had to win their first two games. They had to beat Mississippi State to close out the regular season and then beat LSU and Kentucky, and I think they're going to be in the discussion. Well, clearly I was wrong. They weren't in the discussion. Doesn't even look like they were that close. How surprised were you that Vanderbilt didn't get in, and really the committee said you weren't even that close?
Well, I wasn't too surprised because, you know, I've known Lunardi for years, and we text back and forth, and he just was really adamant about the eight SEC teams he thought were going to get in. And I think Liam Robbins' injury was a factor. I really think it was. Even though they beat Kentucky essentially twice without him, I think they're always going to judge and seed and select based on existing personnel. So, you know, that brings up – there's a lot of question marks in this tournament for teams that did get in and got high seeds that do have significant injuries. But I think an injury to Liam Robbins was a killer. Even going so far back as the loss to Grambling, they try to tell you it's the whole body of work, and I'd like to believe that's true. But, you know, Vanderbilt and their fans have got a legitimate beef. I mean, Mississippi State and Arkansas, they beat them head-to-head. They had losing conference records. Vanderbilt was 11-7. But it just, you take a guy like Liam Robbins out of the picture, and that, I think in the committee's eye, just affected them enough to maybe leave them out.
What do you think about Jerry Stackhouse as a coach?
Well, you know, I really have come to respect and admire Rick Barnes, and I think he's an excellent coach. Some may not agree based on his NCAA record, but he's told me for years that he thought Stackhouse ran great stuff and was a good coach. So, you know, I started paying attention to the things that they do run, and I think he does a good job. I don't know that personnel-wise they've got enough to really contend in the upper echelon, and I don't know. That's always difficult at Vanderbilt. You can't take JUCOs. You can't take in-season transfers. There's a lot of things that you cannot do that other schools in the league can. So I don't know that he's ever going to have equal footing with some of the people that he's competing against to get in the NCAA tournament.
Justin, does that not sound like Chris just answered everything we've been saying about Jerry Stackhouse right there?
That's
what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
So let's recap quickly.
Yeah.
So, Chris, I've said, you know, we get a lot of calls on it, and I said, look, I think Jerry Stackhouse can coach. I do not think he's a ball roller. You know, a lot of guys in the past, as you know, they got loads of talent, and they're ball rollers. He is not. He can coach. I said, but he's got to figure out a way. He's Jerry freaking Stackhouse. Okay, he's got a name. He's in Nashville, a hot, hot market. He's in the SEC. He's got to get more dudes. Justin then always pushes back. Well, he can't get the same dudes
His powers are muted,
right,
Chris, because he cannot get the same guys that you can get at another school. He's got so many hurdles in front of him, so he cannot go get those same kind of people that would be impressed by somebody of his name and resume.
I think that's right, and it's accurate. I remember, just for one example, when Stallings was there, he couldn't get J.P. Prince because he was a mid-season transfer.
Huh.
And Prince went to Tennessee and helped Tennessee become the number one team in the country. Of course, 2 days later, Vanderbilt beat them. That was back in 2008. But, you know, with players of that ilk and, you know, they've got to – go get certain players. And the problem is Wake, Stanford, Duke, Northwestern, they're all competing for that relatively small pool of players who are both academically qualified and, you know, and you know, project to handle the academic load at Vanderbilt and also projected to handle the athletic load they're going to face. Because let's face it, the SEC is a meat grinder, and it's going to become more so now that Chris Beard is at Ole Miss. He'll immediately get it done there. I say what you will about what happened to him down at Texas. He's a great ball coach, and he'll do a good job. And so where are they going to go for L's? I'd hate to be Lamont Paris at South Carolina right now. And, you know, some of that could blow back on Vanderbilt. It just could. And because I'll tell you what, it's an arms race in the SEC for facilities and coaches and recruiting budgets and whatnot. And Vanderbilt has to keep pace, and there's just certain things in place because they're a great academic institution that's going to make that harder and harder on Coach Stackhouse.
Alabama's going to be the sexy pick by a lot of people to win it all. Do you believe they can actually finish the job and win it all? I know they were impressive here. Look, I came out of there going on Monday show was like, wow, seeing them courtside, wow. I mean, they're impressive to watch. And obviously Brandon Miller, who's from here. But can they finish the job? Do they have six more games in them?
My buddy and I, Kevin Ingram, you know.
Oh, yeah, he was on here yesterday.
Yep.
And what he does. And we were on our podcast and we were joking. Seth Greenberg said Alabama was like a Noah's Ark. They got two of everything. And we said, yeah, they've even got two Noahs, Noah Clowney and Noah Gurley. And they make good use of the Ark.
Oh, nice.
But, of course, we meant the three-point Ark. And therein lies the answer to your question. Nate Oates is a mathematician. He taught it at the high school level. He's a metrics guy. He lives and dies by it. Every summer when I get to talk to him for my Blue Ribbon story on Alabama, he sends me guys these unbelievable stats on an Excel spreadsheet. They chart everything, even in the summer, everything they do. And he thinks, and he's always thought, or at least he has since he's become a head coach, that you have to take 30 three-point shots in this system. So they want 33s. If you can't get those, they want you to go to the rim. So he's looking for three is better than two. At the rim is the highest percentage field goal attempt you can make. And if you get fouled doing that, it's free throw. So they're going to take 33s come hell or come high water. And it's going to come down to, and you'll notice in the last couple of games here or in Nashville, they had to get untracked late. They weren't making threes, especially Brandon Miller. They had to get untracked late. And I think that if they can shoot a better percentage early on in games, yeah, I think they can win it all. I'll tell you, a key player is Mark Sears, the transfer from Ohio. He had a great start to the season. He's a 40% career three shooter. He got into a little bit of a shooting slump near the end. If he can break out of that, they'll basically have four three shooters, and they'll play four out and one in. And if they're all clicking at a high level, Brandon Miller can go off any time. We've seen that. So if they're all clicking at a high level, yeah, I think they can win it all. They've got the size that it's going to take to compete against Arizona, which has great size, and ultimately maybe against Purdue, which has the mountain. Zach Edey, the only unanimous AP All-American. So, yeah, I think they've got what it takes. And I just think that they were able to get away with slow shooting starts in the SEC tournament, and I don't know that they'll be able to get away with that in the NCAAs.
I sat there courtside Saturday and watched Texas A&M shoot 70% in the first half, and I know that's not something you can expect to do very often in the tournament or again, but when they're on, man, they are an impressive. I told Justin, seeing them up close, like they're a scary team. Like if we were recreating a scene from Anchorman, like I would not want them coming down the alley. I mean, these dudes are not only like Alabama's long, but they're like long and kind of, you know, they're long and skinny. These guys at A&M are they're huge. I mean, they're
bigger
built
in Texas.
They're bigger in Texas. Why do you think the committee didn't like the Aggies?
You know, they didn't like him last year.
Didn't let
him in the tournament.
No.
You know, I think that they got off to a relatively poor start to the season, and that matters. They were 6-5 at one point, and I'm looking here to make sure I'm right, but I think they lost to Wofford. They did lose to Wofford.
Mm-hmm.
They lost to Murray State, which isn't near the Murray State that they were before. So, you know, they got off to a slow start, and that matters. But they got it turned around in conference play, and I think they're more than their size. I think their guards, they're just so good. They focus on getting to the rim, and they're number 3 in the country in terms of free throw attempts to field goal attempts, 45.9%. And they shoot at a high level, almost 76%, which is 39th in the country. So they know where their bread's buttered. They try to get downhill. So if you're going to beat them, you're going to have to keep their guards out of the paint. And, you know, we'll see how far they get. I have them, let's see, where do I have them? They're going to ultimately play Texas, which, you know, the committee says that these matchups that you see are coincidental.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Sure. Yep.
One program plays a coach whose mentor is from the other program, you know,
yeah,
stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so they're going to ultimately play Texas, I think, and that at least in my bracket. And I think Texas can take them out. But, yeah, they're tough. They're tough. And Buzz Williams, he's another guy like Chris Beard, like Chris Chans, like Steve Forbes over at Wake Forest, Mark Adams before he met his demise at Texas Tech, all people with JUCO backgrounds and successful as head coaches at the JUCO level. I don't see why more athletic directors don't get hip with that, because those kind of guys, they're used to building programs from scratch and can get it done right away. I've watched a little bit of Chris Beard's announcement at a press conference at Ole Miss, and he basically said, Selection Sunday is 363 days away. I hope to see you all here then to see where we're going to be picked in the NCAA. I mean, his track record proves it. They're not looking at rebuilding. They're looking at getting the NCAA next year. So those kind of coaches, they're tough, and they know how to build programs, and they know how to build chemistry in a hurry.
Quest, do these conference championships, these conference tournaments, do they count for anything, or has the committee already pretty much made up its mind before they even tip the ball off at one of these things?
Man, that's a good question. And I think that David Warlock from the NCAA answered it maybe wittingly or unwittingly on Twitter. He tweeted out that they picked the field on Saturday. The field was already set. So
yeah.
It didn't much matter. You know, he said at that point it was a matter of seeding and what they call scrubbing the bracket to make sure that all their restrictions are met, you know, in terms of travel, in terms of not coming up against somebody in your own conference before the Sweet 16 and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's funny. Sometimes you look at a team that got left out and you think, well, the regular season didn't mean a lick. And sometimes you look and you see, well, conference tournaments didn't mean a lick. I'll give you an example, Clemson. They got to be really bummed that they got left out, and NC State got put in because they beat NC State 3 times in the regular season by an average of 21.5 points.
Jeez.
And yet, and they had a 12-6 record in the league. And they get left out in favor of NC State. So they're kind of thinking, well, regular season didn't count for much. And then there's other teams that made a little bit of a run in a conference tournament, get left out, and they got to think, well, was the NCAA even paying attention? So I don't know. I've heard a lot of people say that the SEC should maybe push their title game back one day to Saturday and see if that might – you know, alter things if a team was trying to fight for its life to get in, to get a bid.
All right, let me switch gears before we're out of time here. My Twitter feed and, you know, group chats and things like that have been loaded with people wanting to talk to me about North Carolina not going to the NIT. I had a good friend of mine who says that the NIT needs to go the way of the VCR, if you understand what I mean. What is the relevance still in 2023 of the NIT? Where is it in the sports landscape? And is my friend, you know, correct? Does this need to go away?
Well, here's what I think about it. And I'm too young to remember this, but there was a time where teams refused NCAA bids to play in the NIT.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got tradition. You know, not so much now. They've left the Garden. They're playing in Las Vegas. It's a little bit different. But I was good friends with Dave Odom back when he coached at Wake Forest in South Carolina. And if I'm not mistaken, you guys can double-check me on this, but I think he won either three or four NIT championships. And the reason that he did was because he convinced his players, hey, you're still one of 90, whatever it is, some odd teams left playing. That's a good thing. So let's don't look at this as a consolation prize. Let's play. So, yeah, I still like I'm going to admit to you, I watched some NIT games last night. I'll watch more tonight. It's ball. And I think it's good for programs. I don't think that these other alphabet soup tournaments that are cropping up where like the CBI where you got to pay 50 G's just to get in and you get in with losing records. I just don't see how that benefits anybody. I mean, if you're a coach, you want to keep playing, but I think the NIT is still a relatively decent consolation prize, especially if you're a team like a Clemson that felt like they did everything they had to do. And there's two ways you can go with that. You can sulk and pout and you know, feel sorry for yourself and get beat in the first round, or you could get mad and value it like Dave Odom's teams used to do and just go win the thing. And then if you are, you're one of only two teams in the country that got to finish their season with a W. And that, you know, that's pretty cool.
Dave Odom, by the way, won NIT championship at Wake Forest, two more at South Carolina. So
yeah,
a total
that's what
three.
I thought it was at least three, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Three total. Well, we'll be watching the NIT Saturday morning at Memorial Gym, Vanderbilt hosting Michigan. Mm. So that'll be an interesting second-round matchup.
That's a good game. Yeah. That's a good game for them. I'm sure you can ask the Vandy players, and they're happy to be playing a Big Ten team still.
Yep. Yeah. And Jerry Stackhouse and Juwan Howard are going to play horse before the game, so we'll see who wins.
I'd love like that. To see that.
Yeah, it'll be cool. Sneakers. Chris, appreciate the visit, as always. Thanks for doing this. It should be a fun tournament. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys.
Chris Storch, Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook. He is the editor and publisher. It's a